House Elections Committee will come to order. Welcome. We do have a quorum. So before we get to any other bills, I think Representative Huntley will move approval of the minutes of March 20th, 2014. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Members, we're going to go a little bit out of order in order to accommodate Representative Marquardt, who I understand has some pressing business in another committee. Like many people this time of year, he's juggling a lot of things. So, Representative Marquardt, welcome to the committee. And I will move that House File 2830 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I just wonder if I can indulge you for a minute.
Sure.
I have the like to welcome the Braham FFA chapter, which is a charter chapter that just started this year in Braham, and they're sitting in on the committee today.
Welcome. Thanks for coming to the Capitol.
Well, Mr. Chair,
if I could just say to the students
up there, this room, I always call it the Duluth room, because all the etchings around there were done of the city of Duluth during the Works Progress Administration, during the Great 30s Depression, when the federal government paid artists to do work, keep them working. So if you walk around and look up there, you can see what Duluth used to look like.
And for our guests, just so you know, Representative Huntley represents Duluth. He doesn't just take an idle curiosity in that city. He represents. So thank you and welcome. And actually, this is my 10th session. I never knew that. Thanks for the education. I had many hearings in this room. I didn't know that. Representative Marquardt, to your bill. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And one thing about this, Mr. Chair, you learn something every day down here. So. But well, thank you. Members, this is not a unique bill. You've heard these before, so I don't think I need to go back into the history of what has happened on these bills. But what this one does is creates appointed position for a treasurer auditor and then also a recorder. And then it has the same 60-day waiting period, the reverse referendum, and those other things that are in many of the other bills you've heard. There is one unique portion here, and that is section number 6 that I would like to mention. And that is because of the kind of the late date of this bill and the late start of the session, and the fact that, and Mr. Chair, I know you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the filings start for various offices at towards the end of May.
That's right.
Now, that to allow Becker County, if this was to be approved, the 60 days it needs after it passes a resolution, and yet wait to see if there's going to be folks that would file for a reverse referendum. What it says is that if people file for these offices, let's say that 60 days gets into this late May into June, if they file and it's before the ballots are printed, then things are fine, it's null and void. If, in fact, it says if they're on the ballot and there was the election or those results would be null and void. So it's to kind of work with the timeline here, but that's unique, I think, from probably any of the other bills you have. I will tell you, members, years ago I was opposed to these. Some of you have been around for a while. In fact, I think I actually stood up on the House floor maybe a few times and stated, because of the idea of the voters not having the choice to do this. But in the 21st century here, when you really come to efficiencies and what counties are having to do and so forth, I really think, as for a matter of efficiency and cost and those type of things, this is the right way to move as counties best shape their ways to addressing the concerns of their constituents. So if you might know, I have Commissioner Barry Nelson here from Becker County. If he could say a few words.
Thank you for joining us. Commissioner Nelson, if you'll just introduce yourself, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's really an honor to be here in the Duluth room now that I learned the history of it a little. Barry Nelson, Becker County Commissioner. This is my, I'm in my third term, my 10th year. We have always had this on our agenda to ask for, and we've never really been pushing it. What's so unique this go-round is our, we're in a unique position to redesign the two functions of our county government. Our former county auditor, treasurer, has taken another job in the city of Detroit Lakes, well, with the school district, excuse me, chief financial officer, so we have a vacant position. I never thought we'd lose him. He's a tremendous auditor treasurer for us. Young man with three children. One of the things, you know, he was concerned about was running that election and running for election. It wasn't his major concern, but it was one of the issues for him for little job security for someone in the school district. So that's just part of it. The current recorder also has announced her retirement at the end of the year. So the timing for us, it's probably why we're, you know, kind of pushing it. It wasn't as urgent as it. It's more urgent than it should be because of those circumstances. With these two positions vacant and no one identified candidates for those elected positions, we are seeing it as an opportunity to combine these positions to allow for one appointed position. Now, again, that's not something that we would mandate. If we look at it after a search committee, we would determine if that's the best for us at the time. We kind of think it would be. There would be some cost savings, but we're not absolutely sure. We would pursue that as the most viable option. And that would provide a one-stop shop for county functions that are currently located in three different departments. The bill also provides a reverse referendum, as Representative Marquardt explained. And if there's any questions, I would... And thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for Commissioner Nelson? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
No. Commissioner Nelson, currently we have a process in the statutes for doing this without having special legislations. Have you looked into that at all?
Commissioner Nelson.
I'm into the process to have them appointed.
Put it up to a vote.
Oh, as no, we hadn't. And like Representative Marquardt said, you know, in the past it wasn't something that I think everyone supported as much as they do now. It's such a big responsibility for one individual, you know, and we're nearing a $50 million budget in Becker County, and the urgency came up. We've always kind of been on the tail end of legislation to ask for it that way. We've never really went out for a public vote. We have not researched that at all. This would offer the reverse referendum if this were to pass.
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. I think more than maybe most of the bills that come in to do this, there's probably more of an urgency just because of the situation that you've had, the resignation of actually both. One's retiring, one took another job. To do this kind of now, it would be a nice kind of seamless way to do it now rather than they have to wait and do the election. It may, well, the timeline would extend it much further out. So this might probably be a better case than most as to why it might be done now.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, like you said in the past, you've been against these. I still am against these type of issues because I think if you're going to take a person's right to vote for away, they should have a say in that, and not the legislature taking that away or the county board taking that away, but it should be up to the people to do that because the people are the one that oversee those positions right now. If there's an issue, the next election, they can remove that person and replace them. Unlike these bills with a special session, instead of those positions being overseen by the people, it's overseen by one person or the county board, which sometimes I have my own speculations why it wants to be done, and sometimes it's not just for financial reasons. But I do understand the urgency of what you're looking at now.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, thank you. And, of course, 10% of registered voters could file a petition and there would be the reverse referendum. So there still is. Representative Johnson, I've wrestled with that for years, and I was on your side for many years, let me tell you.
That's a good idea.
Any other questions from members for Commissioner Nelson or Representative Marquardt? Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2830 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Marburg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much.
Appreciate
sure. that. Member, thank you.
Okay, next, Representative Newton. Thank you for your patience. Representative Halverson will move that House File 3178 be re-referred to the General Register. To your bill, Representative Newton.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, rather than read the bill summary, what we're doing here is we, in current statute, if a school district wants to dissolve its election district and move to at-large districts, they can do it. In an Okehannapin, for example, we have school districts, and so each of the members of the school board is elected by district, not at large. But even though it's permitted in statute to go from that process to an at-large, you can't be at-large and move to... No, it's the opposite. It's just the opposite. So we have districts like South St. Paul that are now built out, you know, and would like to go back to being in a large district, but they've been, you know, since 1901 as separated into districts. And so all we're trying to do is to make it so that the districts can go either way. And Ms. Kelleher from the School Board Association would like to address the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kelleher. Just identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We are thrilled that Representative Newton brought this bill forward. This has been part of our legislative plank for the past 20 years, and it's one of the things we stumbled across in law that was brought forward by our members, who were able by law to go from at-large districts down to, or at-large to member districts, similar to legislative districts. So there's a process to do that in law, but once there, never out. So it's like, it's easy to get in, but you can't get out. And South St. Paul, I know, is the example. You had a standalone bill here that would allow them to go back from member districts to at-large. They coordinated with their city council seats back in 1901. And the problem is we've probably got about 12 school districts presently out there that would be impacted because they're election districts. The point is districts are very careful. As I said, they don't normally even want to look at this option since they can't say for the rest of eternity they want to stay this way. So, Mr. Chairman, I think it would allow our school boards to represent the members of the public in a better, more useful way, and allow those who would like to get out of that situation from having to come back here in front of your committee.
I have a question, actually, Ms. Kelleher, or for the author. I recall some years ago being on this committee, and we were debating, I think it was Minneapolis, that was seeking special permission to go from at-large to a unit-based or ward-based or some smaller unit. And the reason they wanted to do that, obviously, was to empower certain communities that had been not empowered. And I voted for that. I thought it was a good idea. It's not the law. Can you just allay any concerns on the record that, that this might somehow be used by communities to take away power from other communities that have been traditionally overlooked?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a valid comment. I think boards are very careful in how they put this together. From going to at-large to member districts, there is a process in law. You start out with a petition. The petition says we'd like to separate into election districts. You can then choose some kind of option, whether it be single member or multi-member. You have to keep it in contiguous territory, then publish it in the newspaper, then gather everybody together in a public school board meeting where people can bring their concerns. And then the board would have to decide if, in fact, it can either confirm present boundaries or say, I want to change. They don't like that. They have, and in 6 months, haven't made their decision. The law goes so far as to withhold their pay unless they make a decision. All $3. And then the law would become effective after the date of the state primary election in the year ending in 2, if it's not specified in the and then boundaries become effective over 90 days if specified.
I want to be clear. I support the bill, and I think that flexibility is important. But I remember, as a motivating factor, the reason for allowing a city like Minneapolis to go the other way was that impulse to empower other communities, and I just wanted to make sure on the record, in case anyone had that concern. I don't enough to oppose the bill. I support the bill, but I'm glad you were able to enunciate that. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, I see the need for being and why some of the school districts want to go back to the at-large. In my school district, or one of my seven or nine school districts, can't keep track of how many school districts are in my district, we have one that has two fairly large cities. And up until this past school board election, they're an at-large. One city outnumbers the other one by over a third, almost by half in population. And the one city that is over 5,000 people for the last 8 years never had any representation on the school board, and they're an at-large. We had two or three of the members that lived in the larger city. So the one city was basically where there is three schools, actual schools in the city limits, had no representation on the school board. So I understand the need and why it would. And I'm almost in favor more of having the school boards being by district than being at large. But my concern is if there's a process to go at large to return, or a process to go at two districts, the same process should be there to go back.
And that's all we're asking for, Mr. Chair, is, you know, that we've got the flexibility to move either direction, depending on the community. And a lot of times, I think, especially in smaller communities, they may start off by having districts because they're expanding. And then once they build out, like South St. Paul did, then they want to go to something else.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newton, would this... If this is just done by resolution, and I'm sorry if I didn't pick this up, could you do this in an election year and have it take effect? You know, could you pass this resolution in July and have it take effect in the November election?
Ms. Kelleher.
I'm looking in the law in 125A1-2, and... I think I just went over that. Basically, if the election day districts are chosen, the law then becomes effective on the date of the state primary election in the year ending in 2 or 90 days after the adoption of the school board resolution after the school district's general election, and that's in sub 6.
Mr. Chair, I don't understand. I don't know if Mr. Gehring can translate that into English after maybe having a chance to figure it out.
Mr. Gehring? I guess Representative
Winkler. Here's my concern. My concern is you have politically fractious issues taking place, and you think the way to get rid of a school board member that you don't like is to change it to at-large elections because you think for some reason you can game the outcome of the election differently depending on what happens. So then the question, I mean, one way to deal with that might be just to say that an election has to go, and you have to do it effective after the next election or something like that.
And Representative Winkler, I would just, you know, obviously that same gaming of the system is currently possible with respect to the opposite movement, it sounds like.
Correct.
If this interpretation is correct. So, Mr. Gehring, I know we're ambushing you here, but maybe you can see whether that's the case or not. But Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman and members, I should share with you the other body was sort of concerned about the same thing. So they put in that it would take it to the people for a yes or no vote. But that would still leave us a path to get there, and we're certainly open to that.
That's, Mr. Chair, that's one solution. I don't know that that's the kind of thing that's going to really captivate the public mind. So it may be that it's better to sort of have a cooling off period so you can make the change. In the event that it is driven by, you know, internal rivalry or something on the school board, that you can pass it, but it goes into effect for the next election, not the upcoming election. That would be another alternative. I don't have an amendment to offer on the fly here. And it may be that we should apply it the other way, too, mm-hmm. so that you can't. And we haven't seen that problem, obviously, but or maybe we have. I don't know. But you can easily see when some of these very controversial issues come up, school consolidation or changing the, you know, the maps for elementary schools or curriculum, all those kinds of things can result in some pretty ugly situations potentially, and we don't want people to change the election in order to get rid of certain members mm-hmm. or to gain others.
Mr. Chair, I would actually agree with that. I think, you know, and that's possible. School boards can be pretty contentious sometimes, and I've got one in my area, not in my district, but have had some real issues and have had, I think, members of the board that have been removed. So,
Mr. Chair, I wonder if looks like Mr. Gehring has some value to add here.
Mr. Gehring, as always.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I guess I don't know that I necessarily have anything of particular value except just to sort of concur with what Ms. Kelleher said about the timing. I think if you're, there is a process that, as she recited, for when boundaries become effective if you move to district elections, but the section that relates to dissolving election districts and going to at-large doesn't have that effective date language. So if you wanted to clarify that, it might be an appropriate thing to do just to make sure the timing is consistent with what you want to see in the law.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gehring, can you just describe what that timing is? Because I didn't totally follow the description from Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, so basically the way the statute is written currently, it kind of presumes that the districts are being created after a redistricting cycle. Mm-hmm. So there's language that says that new districts, once you've done a full redistricting after a census is taken, the new districts become effective in the year ending in two, so like in 2012 or 2022. And then the second condition is if you're not doing it in a redistricting cycle, then the boundaries are effective 90 days after the board adopts the resolution setting the new boundaries. And I think it's just presumed that they wouldn't be adopting new boundaries, you know, within 90 days of an actual election. But it's not clear really whether there's a cutoff date for when the resolution has to be adopted.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, it sounds like Representative Newton might be open to some discussion about how to potentially deal with that problem. I mean, we're not going to be able to put an amendment together here. I assume this goes to the floor, and I have no problem with floor amendments that are substantive, Mr. Chair. Don't call me a purist on process. So, if we can work this out, I think if you're open to it, I think we should try to take a look at a way to make that work. I'm not convinced that the Senate option of a public vote is the right way to solve that either.
I share that view, Representative Winkler. That I think this is appropriate for a floor amendment, given the apparent agreement of everyone involved, that there could be some tweaking and there's no objection, and we're up against a deadline, so it would have been impractical to work this out in our last hearing before deadline. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Mr. Gehring on this. We do reapportionment every 10 years, as was described by Ms. Mm-hmm. Kelleher. Are school districts in this particular statute or in this situation prohibited from doing redistricting boundaries within their wards or within their precincts any time within that 10-year period of time as well that we would be concerned about, as some have suggested, gaming elections?
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, so the statute provides that school districts are required to conform their boundaries after a census is taken, so under the same cycle as for statewide redistricting, but there is also an allowance for districts to redefine their boundaries after any school district general election. So I think they are authorized to do it at any time in the course of a decade if they chose to do so.
Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman, just to add a little bit, I think the idea of being there, if you have lots of growth in a member of district, mm-hmm. these election districts, mm-hmm. you can offset it. And the idea is each member of the school board would represent a similar number of people. And so you might need to adjust those depending on how your community grows.
Interestingly, members, I know that there is no prohibition on us doing redistricting at any time, although it's traditionally done after a census cycle and should be, in my view. There have been examples in other states where, in the middle of a decade, sometimes for questionable reasons, they've decided to do a redistricting. But we, like those other states, are not bound to only do it once a decade. But I would hope that we would keep with tradition and only do it then. Any other member questions or comments?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Driscoll.
You probably saw a few of us over here laughing. We were hoping that you weren't suggesting that that's something that we should be undertaking. we already have enough on our agenda for this session, Mr. Chair.
We have enough, Representative Driscoll. Definitely.
Mr. Any Chair, we could make an amendment to this bill.
We could.
This looks like a vehicle, Mr.
Chair. You weren't supposed to say anything, Representative. Are there any other comments from members? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Halverson renews her motion that House File 3178 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Newton. Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. The final bill is from Representative Moline, House File 3115. Welcome, Representative Moline. I will move your bill. I'll move that House File 3115 be re-referred to the General Register. Welcome to the committee to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I do have a delete all amendment as well, the DE1.
Okay.
And I believe it just changes one word on line 1.12, changes the word requirements to provisions.
Okay. To get it in the shape that the author wishes, I'll move the DE1 amendment. Any comments or questions from members on the DE1 amendment? Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on DE1? Seeing no one, all in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The DE1 is adopted. To the bill as amended. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm in front of you today regarding the St. Louis County Commissioners and a proposal to put the range commissioners back on staggered terms. Currently, the board has 7 members, 3 on the range up to the Canadian border, 3 in Duluth, and then 1 sort of in the Proctor-Hermantown area. The 3 Duluth commissioners are on staggered terms. The 3 range commissioners were on staggered terms from statehood until 2002, when there was a redistricting plan that ended up going through the courts. And at that time, the courts not only redistricted the commissioners' districts, but then they put the range all in the same election cycle. And so it's the will of the board for the range commissioners to go back on a staggered term so they're not all up for election at the same time. And you will find in your packet a resolution passed by the St. Louis County Board, 5-1 in support of this plan. There was 1 absence, Chair Forsman, but I have had a chance to speak to him, and he is supportive as well. So we would ask for member support. And I have with me John Ungaro, who is Government Relations with St. Louis County, if he wants to add anything further or if he just wants to field questions.
Mr. Ungaro?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. John Ungaro, Government Relations Director for St. Louis County. I'm here simply to help answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Ungaro or for the author? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, welcome to the Elections Committee. Just a couple of questions because I'm not familiar with the structure of St. Louis County. You're referencing District 7, so I'm assuming that that would be County Board District 7. How many districts are there in St. Louis County? If you mentioned it, I didn't catch it.
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, there are 7. So the 7th district is where I happen to live, kind of the Hibbing-Chisholm area. And so what this would do would, that commissioner is up for re-election this year. He and whoever runs against him would run this year, and then that would only be a 2-year term as opposed to the 4-year term. So there would be another election for the 7th district in 2016.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my assumption would be you have a 4-3 cycle then? For the total of 7 districts, 4 commissioners would be up in a cycle of two even-numbered years, and then the other three would be up the following even-numbered year for the general election.
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, that's correct.
Representative Driscoll.
And just again, from some clarification, this does not affect any other districts within here. It's just District 7 that would help us, because the other six districts are already on split even-numbered year elections.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll. The three Duluth commissioners are on staggered terms, and right now the three range commissioners are on staggered terms. By putting this district into a two-year term and then a four-year term, so it'll be 2-4-4, then it'll put the range commissioners on the staggered terms. So there's three commissioners that represent the Iron Range region.
I'll take your word for that. And I really don't necessarily need a picture. I just want to make sure that by just isolating District 7 that we have got the balance that you're looking for, and I'm assuming that you do. But the fact that it doesn't reference the other six districts, that's why I just wanted to ask to make sure that we're accomplishing the overall goal of getting that staggered election, and that apparently District 7 just has some unique situations or circumstances compared to the other, and the geographic disbursement of the population and what have you. I guess it's enough said. I really don't know.
Mr. Chair, just to clear it up, that is the district that was originally staggered from statehood until 2002. So I think that's why that's the range district that will be staggered again in this proposal.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Hunt?
Comment, Mr. Chair and members. This is the first time in state history that the range wants to be treated like dirt tools.
That is probably true.
Mark your calendars, everyone. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, Commissioner, this is a good example why, even when the courts get involved in redistricting, the auditor, treasurer, who's in charge of elections, and the boards that are involved have to take a close look at what's going on. Because the way the statute reads, the even number districts are 1 year of the election, and the odd numbers are the opposite year. If they would have caught this right after the redistricting draft maps were drafted, they could have swapped two numbers of the districts, so District 7 could have been District 6, and we would not have had this issue.
It's an interesting point. Any other member questions, comments? Anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay, seeing none. Any final comments, Representative Lee?
No, Mr. Chair. I would just ask for members' support.
Okay. I'll renew my motion then that House File 3115 be re-referred as amended to the General Register. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Moton prevails. Thank you, Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Members, that concludes our business. We do have one other committee hearing a week from Friday, and that is to confirm, to vote on the confirmation of two members to the Campaign Finance Board. Three members to the Campaign Finance Board. If you recall, this is one of those rare instances where both the House and Senate, not just the Senate, must confirm, and this is something we regularly do. Representative O'Driscoll.
Some housekeeping on that. What's the date for that?
April 4th.
April 4th.
Okay, thank you.
Right. And members, normally a Friday would seem to be inconvenient, but because that's the last date on which finance committees will be doing a lot of their work, we suspect that most everyone will be around here.
Because one of them is from Greater Minnesota, we're coordinating with the Senate.
That's right. That's right. And because that's a good point. Mr. Gelbman reminds me that the other reason for doing it that date is one of the prospective members of the Campaign Finance Board is from Greater Minnesota, and we had to coordinate schedules so that the Senate could do their confirmation hearing in the afternoon, and we'll do ours about midday. Or it's the morning, isn't it? Yeah, it's the morning. Okay. So just check your emails. But unless there's any further business before the committee. Oh, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you pointed out, there are the final finance committees and things that are getting done that day, and no one is scheduled typically to be on Friday. Are we going to be able to put some due diligence in making sure that members, because we are a smaller committee, aren't being predisposed in other finance committees to get those things done. And I know Mr. Gelman's really pretty good about being able to manage the chessboard when it comes to some of those kinds of things, but I just want to make sure that we're on record with that. Because there are a number of people, as I look around, who are on, some are together and some are on different finance committees. And
sure. Representative Driscoll, yes, we'll make sure we have a quorum. We'll
thank
need
you.
One in order to.
Wayne Vaughn has done reports and the schedule's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Mr. Gelman reminds me the schedule's only going to get worse, so we might as well get it done sooner rather than later. By law, it has to be done before we adjourn. Speaking of adjournment. Seeing no further business, this committee is adjourned.
Nobody got to stay.